G'day, Don. We can talk about wages.
And isn't Stanley one of the most beautiful
places in the country?
Anyway, yes. So yes, we're going to talk about wages, and we will. And I do want to talk about wages in reference to what's been going on in the major exchanges, public exchanges, and then also at particular workplaces around women's safety at work. But first, there has been some new information coming out about what's going on in manufacturing industry that we discussed in our first couple of discussions this year in 2022. So I just want to bring listeners up to date on that, take a couple of minutes to do that, and then we can have a talk about what's going on in workplaces and industries that are of great moment for the majority of the population.
Okay, go for it.
So on the manufacturing industry, I picked up that, of course, earlier in the week, Morrison made a new announcement, a new breathless announcement, that there would be a new $2 billion funding scheme for the commercialising of ideas about new Australian technologies, that is, products and other commodities that relate to both, you know, things that are used to make products and then the end result, which is picked up by consumers.
Yes, yeah, so that American companies then can, so American companies can come along, like the lithium battery.
I'm about to come to that.
Yeah, sorry.
But the interesting idea about that is that my hunch is that that $2 billion, probably at least a half of it, is actually rolled over from the previous schemes, yeah, breathlessly announced, of course, in the middle of last year and late the year before, that were shut down in December, before their funding had been completed.
A bit more tricky-dicky stuff, hey?
Yeah, more of that. However, it's very interesting that he's into commercialing ideas because a company called Tritium, which is an Australian-based manufacturing company established in southeast Queensland, there's more that can be said about all of this, but Tritium has announced a huge expansion into the United States. And then later in the year, there'll be a follow-up, smaller expansion into Europe. Tritium makes charging units for electric cars.
Surprise.
Operation in southeast Queensland employs about 370 people operating over two and sometimes three shifts. The announcement regarding opening up a production facility where it's going to make these things, no. Not an expansion in Australia, but an expansion in the USA, funded significantly by subsidies from the Biden administration, is going to put 500 people into work in somewhere in Tennessee in the USA. Now, the effect of that is quite likely that it will suck some jobs out of the Southeast Queensland operation. So there we have all of this breathless excitement from the Morrison government.
That's really interesting because all the public saber rattling against China actually delivered a whole lot of beef exports from America to China.
Exactly. So what we have here is a manufacturing industry that ought to be developed in Australia so that the units that are produced are exported. But no, not with this government. It's breathless exciting announcements, which are really advertising, jobs, are really a policy failure. Policy failure.
And this is terrible, isn't it? They're just awful.
This just goes on from what Kevin was saying not so very, just a few minutes ago.
Yeah, terrible.
The only other little bit to add to that is you may recall that we pointed out that one of the chief architects of the new manufacturing pivot that the COVID-19 pandemic had inspired the government into. Remember the manufacturing pivot? One of the two sort of overall supervisors before that, a Fortescue executive by the name of Nev Power, well, he got sprung using his helicopter, because he's quite a wealthy man, he used an helicopter to get around, using his helicopter to get from Queensland across the border restrictions back into Western Australia. But this guy was, for a while, until it got shut down, he was, an element of this, of course, was the development of the manufacturing proposals, or non-proposals, He was the head of the COVID Commission. So we had the head of the COVID Commission being sprung and caught, and that yesterday in court, for breaching the COVID restrictions using his helicopter, which, of course, any one of us could possibly do.
Sounds a little bit like the Prime Minister of England.
Yes, it's somewhat like that. It turns out that the language used in the court to try and find a defence for his
indefensibility
was described as willful blindness.
Don't they? They obviously don't have a phrase book with them.
I just think that. We have another policy failure. When it comes to women and safety at work, we have another policy failure. There are three points to be made before we go to the sort of incredible significance, really, of the Grace Tame and Brittany Higgins speeches in the National Press Club last week. Not just for women in higher incomes and so on, but for women generally, and particularly for women working for wages, working away on relatively low incomes, and particularly in so-called feminised occupational groups. Well, the first thing is that New South Wales nurses, of course, are going on strike next week.
That's right. They are.
It's quite likely that you're reporting that in other ways. But the central issue there is the inadequate staffing and the horrendous workloads imposed upon nurses, who are overwhelmingly women. And, of course, that's causing enormous health problems. In other words, going to work as a nurse is an incredibly dangerous occupation at the moment, with all sorts of health implications and life implications.
Well, it's interesting that you should bring up manufacturing close to welfare industries, because, of course, welfare industries are almost to the... financial class, or the boss wallers, is a servant class, effectively. They don't think they're actually producing anything which gives them profit, and therefore it doesn't deserve to be paid properly.
Well, the reality, of course, is that nurses, as are other healthcare workers and childcare workers and teachers, their economic contribution, of course, their contribution is far more than economic, but their economic contribution is
It's absolutely vast.
And capable workforce every day of the week. They, as much as anyone, help to turn the society over every day.
This is an example of why free market economics as the lever for society is just such a fool concept.
Yes, although it's seduced many of us, the majority of the population are still seduced by it, unfortunately. A bit more about that in a minute when we talk about wages, perhaps. But the Grace Tame and Brittany Higgins speeches were incredibly significant, I think. They coincided with a report on how dangerous it is for women to work in Rio Tinto. There was a report released that shows that 43% of the women working at Rio Tinto's fly-in and fly-out and drive-in, drive-out mine sites have experienced sexual harassment. These are big numbers. Now, this means that safety at work is not just a Parliament House issue. It is an issue experienced by all predominantly working women. Men are also sexually harassed, although not to the same degree. The report said that it is sexual harassment and racism also are common throughout Rio Tinto. Now, I think this is a window into all workplaces, and that what we have is a situation where more than half of Australians live in or on the edge of fear throughout their daily lives. 43% at Rio Tinto, it'll be higher in many other workplaces and maybe lower in some others. Now, if it's 43% who report the actual experience of it,
imagine.
It's a big majority who know enough about it to be frightened of it during their going to and from work every day. And then some of them, of course, go home to the same fear in their domestic lives. This is unacceptable. Now, this is where we get to another big policy failure, is that the is that in 1920, the government was presented with the landmark Respect at Work report that the Commissioner Jenkins, Kate Jenkins, who did
you
the
mean 2019?
1919, was it 1920? 1919. I think the survey
2019.
Anyway,
you said 1920.
I'm talking about 2019.
Yeah, I was going to say that's crazy, man.
Yes. My aging brain. So there we have a report which outlined the full dimensions of the problem across the Australian workplace and industrial scene. That sexual harassment was rife. Workplaces are dangerous places for 50% plus of the population. And that report contained recommendations. The central one was that employers should face an obligation to take reasonable measures to eliminate the prospect of sex discrimination and sexual harassment as far as possible. So it's a very modest recommendation. Has the government actually acted on this? No. They could easily have taken steps in a number of ways to make sure that the onus was on employers to ensure that their workplaces were removing the prospect of sexual harassment and therefore making them safer. But no, they haven't done that either. Yet another thing.
They don't believe in equality, and they don't believe in. I think this is a clear statement of how foolish of you to think that you can change things through policy. You're just not being realistic. This is the way life is supposed to be.
Yes, that's their view of the world. That's their view of the world, and of course they're so caught up in their own pride.
Well, they're male and white and rich, and they've already fooled everybody into filling their pockets with more moolah.
And their daily lives, in terms of the decisions they make as parliamentarians and so on, are governed by the pressure put upon them by the corporate sector.
Yeah, it's creepy.
Expect them to be looking after the corporate sector first, foremost, and last. So that brings us on to the wages scene. There is a lot more that can be said about that, and your listeners can know how to get hold of and read the Respect at Work report, which does exactly what Grace Tame and Brittany Higgins were talking about, which is extending our understanding about what's going on beyond just Parliament House.
It's like the deathless statement in the Bible about the poor will always be with us. They don't have to be. But...
No.
Go on.
So
let's talk about wages and the poor. Us.
Well, my hunch is that the big remaining hope for the Liberal National Party to win the election is the economy. Not because the economy is in reality shifting into better shape, but because there's going to be about a 2 to 3 month window in which can be superficially presented as being in good shape. And superficial presentation of what's going on in the economy is enough to convince, I don't know, 20% of voters that the government is doing a good job, which we know to be not true when you dig slightly below the surface. And that's going to be, all of that is going to be in sharp relief over the next 2 or 3 months, because the annual wage review will coincide with much of the election period. The annual wage review is now underway. And the new dates were announced a couple of days ago by the Fair Work Commission about the timetable for the process. Now, for listeners who don't know, The annual wage review is a consultation process conducted by a special bench of the Fair Work Commission in which interested parties, which means unions or employers, present their claims about how much the national minimum wage should be increased, if at all, and how much the minimum rates in our industrial wards should be increased, if at all.
Well, that's fairly interesting. Recently, the Reserve Bank had something to say about this, didn't they?
Yes, the Reserve Bank said that what they would like to see is wages rising to around 4%, because they think that's the tolerable level at which anything less than that would mean that they're not that interested at the present time in shifting interest rates, because there's this connection between interest rates, prices, wages and prices.
Well, you know, that's really interesting because, you know, aged care workers are calling for 21% increase in their wages.
Yeah, I read it as 25%. The first thing to be said about what... there's two points to be made there, firstly. What the Reserve Bank Governor, Mr. Lowe, said, 4%, he will not back up with a public endorsement of an ACTU claim for 4% or more. He will not do that. So it's weasel words. So if the ACTU come forward with a claim of, let's imagine, 4 or 4.5...
That's like saying politics shouldn't be involved in sport. Like, politics shouldn't be involved in banking.
Well, both the Reserve Bank... It's not really regular for the Reserve Bank Governor to make a formal submission into the annual wages review, but it is completely acceptable for it to express a public opinion about what the Commission ought to consider. Now, if their view is that they would like to see wages rising around 4%, it would be logical for them to do that, to say, well, we hope that the Fair Work Commission does find a way to around 4%. Of course, they're not going to do that. Now, we don't know yet exactly what the ACQ claim is going to be, and of course, we don't therefore also know what the employer's counterclaim is going to be. All that will unfold. In fact, the deadline...
But I can predict the headlines. We'll all be ruined, said Hanrahan.
Yeah, no matter what... Actually, you're dead right. I mean, it would be... You see, there is actually a perfect time for the employers to agree to a union claim to increase wages. And that time is never. Never is their perfect time, and that will be the case this year, I am sure, as it has been in all the previous hearings. So that process is going to unfold, and the first submissions from the unions, the employers and state governments, and just, you know, I think the federal government will dodge the issue, are due on, I think it's April the 1st.
That's even funnier.
Yes, well, it could be funnier, or is it one of those tragicomic sort of moments that we can look forward to? Anyway, I'm expecting the ACTU to put forward a solid claim. Whether there'll be a solid campaign is unknown at this stage. The annual wage review is actually of great significance for workers who are in enterprise agreements. The number of workers in enterprise agreements and the number of agreements are declining. And the many of the agreements are in their third or fourth years, and some in their fifth years, with very low pay increases already negotiated.
You know, the thing that you've just pointed out is that this is the deathbed of the accord.
Oh, I think the accord died a long time ago.
But you know, the fact that the EBA was the final, you know, it was one of the pillars. It was one of the reasons for why various people thought it was had some legs.
Yeah, I'm not sure whether I want to go into that territory today. But
oh, no, because we've only got 3 minutes to go, so yeah. I should keep my mouth shut. Sorry.
Now, this was all happening in the context that yesterday, the Women's Gender Equality Agency reported on the gender pay gap. And once again, the numbers were quite significant. Without going into too much detail, a 22.8% gap in pay on the basis of gender is still the case. And when it comes to the national minimum wage, and also the rates at the lower pay scales in the industrial wards, big numbers of in some industries, a majority of women are employed in there, and there is a relationship between those low rates and the gender pay gap.
All right, we have to stop. We have to stop. We literally have to stop.
So there's lots unfolding and a lot more still to come. And as you say, this aged care workers' pay claim, just a timely reminder of how broken the rules are.
Yeah, exactly.
The Fair Work Act. That claim was lodged in 2020.
Yeah, well, we'll see.
And the decision on it is not likely until towards the end of the year to be made by commissioners. Now, the Fair Work Commissioner is now stacked with more pro-employer, pro-Morrison government commissioners.
Yeah, I know. So we have to go.
Okay, well, it's lovely joining in with you again. Thank you very much, Annie, and best wishes.
We'll talk soon.
Bye for now.